Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Ron and Don Show on Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning. This is Don Allen over in Studio A, and in Studio B is Mr. Ronald A. Edwards. So, Mr. Edwards, how you doing this beautiful sunshiny morning in Minnesota?
Man, it is a great day here in our beloved Minnesota. We are a place that is out front, I guess. With regards to being concerned about, you know, the life expectancy of the sons and daughters of the African, Donald, if you will, and working to solve the multiplicity of problems, though we have to be careful. The toxic twins, Ronnie and Donnie, Donnie and Ronnie, have to be careful because people say that we're too toxic. They tell us that our longtime buddy, Louis King, has been another one of those that has join the club of let them kill themselves. Man, we're free with that, and the black leadership, we're free with that expression, aren't we? I'll let them kill themselves.
Oh, yeah.
You know.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, wow, we're free with that. And this comes on the heels of the governor, beloved governor of our state, a Democrat. I know you love this, Don, from the right. And there these Democrats are, been in power now, you know, getting ready to go on 12 years or whatever. The statement being made, you know, let them kill themselves, and then these proxies, these black proxies that we have. But I understand you have some congratulations. I understand we have a development already in the congressional contest for the 5th Congressional District here in our beloved Minnesota. Could you bring us up to speed, Don, with this Obama?
Yes, bring me up to speed. I would just like to take this moment on behalf of the Ron and Don Show to congratulate Congresswoman Ilhan Omar for winning the 2020 5th Congressional District race for Congress. I don't see anybody out there, Mr. Edwards, that is going to beat her, and it's really funny some of the news coming out from some of these candidates. And so as a conservative, someone on the right, Mr. Edwards, I would just like to tell the candidates, since 2006, the Minnesota GOP has ran a sacrificial lamb. If you can't do better than that in 2020, sit back and take notes. Try to come back again in 2022. You know, don't waste the money. Don't waste the making. You know, it's been a thing, I think, in my opinion, that the Republican races, since 2010 and on, has been a chance to hire some people, raise some money, and some people to get some jobs that wouldn't normally get jobs working on campaigns. And it hasn't worked out for the 5th Congressional District nor the 4th Congressional District. So not that I do not ever want to see a Republican in there. I really would like to see a conservative win the 5th Congressional District, but the candidates up so far, it's not going to happen. It's not in the cards.
Well, Don,
the only way
people
that
happen on the right. I have to cut in, Dodge. You people on the right did have a very good candidate in Miss White, and she was the last strong candidate you folks really had. I mean, per se.
Yeah.
I cannot disagree with you from the left, though. I mean, I'd like to, if you will, because we are. You know, I mean, we're performing and dancing up and down. We Democrats have been talking about impeachment and et cetera, and we don't even have our plans in place. But that is interesting. Now, is it correct? I'm hearing a rumor, Don, from the left, that the Republican perceived front runner, got caught shoplifting in a Target store during the holidays?
Well, that wasn't any new news, but yes, the Star Tribune picked up on it, a couple of other agencies. The City Pages ripped her to shreds, as they normally do with their journalism. And it was very interesting to read that. But, you know, she hasn't made an official statement that she's bowing out, but neither has the young lady, Allie Waterbury, we interviewed right here about 4 weeks ago on this show, who is running against Congresswoman Omar, and also a gentleman we know that's been on this program also, Lacey Johnson, has tossed his hat
Lacey
in the
Johnson,
ring.
African-American, African-Negro. Yes. Okay.
I mean, I know these guys, these people personally, and You know, as a friend, Mr. Edwards, you would hope that if you had a good friend, your good friend would always tell you the truth, right? And with that said, I just told him, I said, you guys just need to bow out. You're not going to win. This is not you. You know, Congresswoman Omar, cause I'm not going to respect or disrespect the position or the person, has become a national phenomenon. She's not necessarily focusing on anything in Minnesota, but that type of rhetoric and banter and bravado bring in donors, sympathetic donors that
and that's what
have
it's all
been
about is internet. The donors.
Yes.
Money for the gold pot.
It's bottom.
Yes, I got you.
So someone's making some money, because I have seen, Mr. Edwards, that, you know, Congresswoman Omar has been making campaign stops in other states for other candidates. And I think that's fine and dandy. I would like to see her come up here and make some stops for some black women running for office in 2020. You know, so far that hasn't happened.
You're asking her to do more than we asked of the former congressman, now the attorney general of the state of Minnesota, because he was globetrotting. And spend a lot of time in Saudi Arabia and places like that. But I understand what you're saying, and, you know, we don't want people to get heated up and upset with doxing Ron and Don and et cetera. But Don, we've got so much going up. You had an announcement. I have this announcement, if you will, and then, you know, we're going to move into the powerful council on colors or whatever. I have just received information from reliable sources. Do you know that a woman by the name of Michelle Gross has been working closely? You remember the last Minneapolis police shooting in our beloved city? You remember that was the 22nd of June of last year? You remember that Thurman Blevins, you remember, gunned down by the police? Remember we saw all of the video or alleged video and et cetera, blah, 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 blah. Do you know that that Ms. Gross and her organization have been working with the family of the deceased? Do you know that they're getting ready to file a action in the federal courts against our beloved mayor and chief and others? These folks have been meeting, and they weren't sucker punched like the Clark family was until Judge Michael Davis, God bless him, came along and, you know, showed the city of Minneapolis that here's how you do the right thing. But anyways, the family and heirs of Thurman Blevins, killed by Minneapolis police on the 22nd day of June 2018, are preparing to go into federal court. Now, we have received this from what we consider to be, Mr. Allen, a reliable source. And this comes on the heels of the basic refusal of the, well, could I get the name, because I grew up hearing the name Council on Black Minnesota, is that Mr. Justin Terrell, the powerful, in fact, he was very much involved in the disastrous meeting at Weber Park in June of 2018, which led to the powerful executive director, Mr. Evans, walking out and saying he would never meet again with a bunch of apes and gorillas, and walked out of the meeting, which was one of the prime reasons that the Thurman Blevins death was, you know, so undermined by powerful figures here in our beloved city. But we wanted to bring that up, and then we also wanted to bring up that Mr. Terrell, powerful African-American here in the state of Minnesota, according to his friends, has declined to give any consideration. There was a letter, Don, from, Michelle Gross, in which she chastised all of them for not having a acceptable mix of citizens of color on these committees. And Mr. Terrell was being asked to create a third committee. He has the authority, power, and et cetera. Of course, I guess Governor Walz. We have so many big tasks. in a response to a white reporter for one of the big white major papers here, when the governor, our beloved governor, was asked a question about the violence, the gun violence, and all of that. He said, "Well, you've got to allow us to make mistakes." So what the governor said is that, you know, we will keep an eye on the body count.
Yes, basically,
and, yeah. Yeah, we'll keep an eye on the body count. If too many of you Negroes, you know, kill each other, et cetera. By the way, we had a big shootout downtown Minneapolis last night. In fact, it's a rite of passage, Don, to talk to you in the production there. It's just become a rite of passage. They shot three in North Minneapolis night before last, if you will. Let me see. Because they always, before Janey and them with the Starts of Doom and the first of them, always pretend that there is not any information being provided to them about all of these mayhems. And so we had shootings at 9th and Oliver, 10th and Morgan, and the 3000 block on Colfax. The night before last. Now, they won't even print, because I know your staff has been checking this morning's paper and said they won't even report the shootings now. They don't even report them. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So there's some hell of a things going on in our cities right now.
I agree totally, Mr. Edwards. You know, Mr. Edwards, now, you were just talking about Justin Terrell, and I don't want to leave this conversation without, you know, being objective about Justin Terrell and what's going on with the Council for Minnesotans of African Heritage, formerly known as the Council of Black Minnesotans. And I just want to give our listeners a brief history. We're going an hour today, so I want to just snap through this real quick. Back in, if I'm not mistaken, 2014, then Executive Director of the Council of Black Minnesotans, Ed McDonald, had put together a almost $200 million legislative agenda for the black community in the state of Minnesota. A couple of our elected officials who were on the Council for Black Minnesotans felt that Ed McDonald, Mr. McDonald, bypassed them and did not use them as pass-throughs to the governor, and were upset. They brought in then State Rep Carolyn Lane, who wrote a bill to disband the Council on Black Minnesotans, make Ed McDonald reapply for his job, and take some of the authority away that the council had back for 20-something years to deal directly with the governor of the state. So they were successful in this overthrow, in this coup of Ed McDonald and his over $200 million legislative agenda. In walks Justin Terrell, who his original information that stated he had a master's degree from the University
from,
of Minnesota.
Yes, I remember that. And then when the records were checked, it wasn't true. But go ahead.
And on this program, Mr. Edwards, on this program about a year ago, we questioned him, and he admitted that he did not have a master's degree. And
yes,
we have that recording in the archive. And since then, he refused to take calls from us, from me at least. And this year, I was wondering what the council is doing. Then I pick up a copy of the Insight News. Now, it's another black news agency, and we're not trying to, you know, everybody's doing their own thing. Everybody has a lane. That's understandable. But when you blatantly tell a story to the black community, the front page on the Insight News says, "Legislature abandons black Minnesotans." And I look at that. There's a picture of Justin Terrell on the left and Senator Jeff Hayden on the right. When I looked at that and then read the story, I'm like, wait a minute. The Council on Minnesotans for African Heritage ignored homeless K-12 students and families. They ignored black veterans. They ignored speaking on behalf of black, Korean, and Hispanic Latino teachers in our community. They ignored black academics in higher education. They ignored black-on-black crime, blaming it on the white community. They ignored big data and data privacy challenges and the income from those streams. They ignored local grant-making agencies and their systematic nickel and diamond of community agencies. They ignored the static of the Minneapolis Urban League and their lack of new ideas. They ignored collaborations with black and brown parents about education and the lack of support from the council and callbacks from its executive director. The Republicans didn't do this. The Republicans didn't. Senator Eric Pratt, who's been on this show, head of the Economic Development Committee at the legislature, told the Urban League, I watched the video. We played it on this
program.
Full support of anything that they wanted to do. It wasn't the Republicans, so you can't go blaming the Republicans. And I'm not defending the Republicans. Don't get me wrong. I'm trying to be objective here. But the people who cut you off are the Democrats. Period.
Well, let me do something on that, Mr. Allen, from the left, because I watched a community activist and fellow talk radio host, Mr. Alfred Flowers of KMOJ. I was in the meeting at the UROC stronghold, if you will, there on Plymouth Avenue across from the kind of disappearing Urban League. There was a meeting in which about 107 people were present, and 98% of them were African Americans. So all that, you know, the black folks don't turn out, we can kind of set that one aside. Now, in this meeting in which four black elected legislators were there, if you will, it was Senator Judge Payton, who was one of two African Americans in our state Senate here in our beloved Minnesota, who confirmed that, you know, the Republicans had done a hatchet job, but that many of his Democratic colleagues had not stood tall with regards to that. Well, as the meeting began to conclude, if you will, Mr. Alfred Flowers took the floor. I mean, he kind of took the floor. He forced Justin Terrell to recognize him. That kind of thing. And Mr. Flowers made some specific declarations of what had really gone on over at the legislature, if you will. And Senator Hayden concurred. He did not oppose the statements by Mr. Flowers. It was on a Tuesday, by the way, Don, at around 6:45, because earlier in the day, a Caucasian had run down six African Americans at a bus stop on a street called West Broadway and Lindale in North Minneapolis. In fact, I understand that community activist Spike Harry Moss, or Harry Spike Moss, has called a press conference for Tuesday in our beloved city to raise questions about how the victims, all African Americans, too, who are still in critical condition, have been ignored. And, in fact, that the Transit Authority has not made a statement or finding, in fact, as it pertains to the accident. This is an accident. Police lied about the fact that they had given him a field sobriety test. They said they took him to some garage in South Minneapolis where they keep cars, and allegedly they had the equipment there. And, you know, 3 hours after the accident, which happened at about 9:15 a.m. in the morning that Tuesday, that allegedly Mr. Jensen, George Jensen was his name, 83-year-old Caucasian, residing in the city of Chapin Park, had allegedly passed with a reading of 0.00. So he hadn't even digested his orange drink, if you will. But anyways, this is tragic because these committees that have been appointed by imperial order, by the first the mayor of the city of Minneapolis, and now the governor, who says, well, you know, you got to let us experiment. And if, you know, in the course of experimenting, we make mistakes and Negroes die, I mean, you know, what the heck? You know, let's just keep on moving. I mean, you know, I mean, that's the way that he put it. But a woman by the name of Michelle Gross, who has been a longtime activist, as has Mr. Flowers, as an example, set the tone and has sent a heated letter to everyone indicating why the common people should not be involved. Now, Mr. Terrell was given a proposal, I understand, in conversation by Mr. Flowers and others, in which would have brought into play people of color who are allegedly identified as, in the declaration creating or revising the council to be brought in from Duluth, Moorhead, southwestern Minnesota, Rochester, and of course Minneapolis, St. Paul, and etc. Mr. Terrell indicated that, you know, he declined to do that. So I guess the two committees that we have, Mr. Allen, are the two created by imperial order, and that's the city of Minneapolis, which was the first, and now the powerful committee being co-chaired by the powerful attorney general and the commissioner, very powerful commissioner of the Department of Public Safety, if you will. Of course, this comes at a time when there's a lot of resignations and etc. over there in the Democratic state government, but I don't want to get into that from the left. But anyways, Justin Terrell, yes. Now, you're saying that there was an itinerary in which he was supposedly to bring before the legislature to correct some of the deficiencies and observations, and we're saying here on the Ron and Don program, he never did that. Is that correct? Is that a pure analysis?
That is a fair analysis and a correct assessment of the current situation. Part of this, Mr. Edwards, is that there was a Dr. Suzanne Madison who was on the council's board, and it was really funny how they says, you cannot be the executive director and be on the board. So if you resign from the board, we will consider you for the executive director position. This is Dr. Suzanne Madison. So she resigned from the board.
They tricked her.
She is well-spoken. She's a very intelligent, well-spoken, and would have done gangbuster numbers, but they knew that. And as soon as she resigned, they had nothing to do with her, Mr. Edwards.
Now, was she a person of color, Mr. Allen?
Yes. Yes, she was. Yes, she is.
I see. Well, it raises serious questions, if you will. I had high expectations that Mr. Terrell would carry the day and that we would have at least a third committee. I mean, and there were all these committees. In fact, we would have the same number. They would have the same number that they have the other two committees, which are 16 seats. 16 seems to be a popular number in our beloved state, if you will. You know what I mean? And, you know, that would have given, my math tells me, 45, if you will, thereabouts. But the word is that there will be no committees that will be created. And they are not happy with Michelle Gross because she stood up. Now, Michelle Gross is a Caucasian woman, very much involved in the shooting death of a young Somali in the small city of Eagan, Minnesota, which is in the southern part of the metro area. But Ms. Gross has raised a serious question. We will probably analyze next week the content of her letter to the powers to be, but apparently her representatives are saying they were stunned by the statement by the beloved governor of the state of Minnesota, who said, well, you know, we first of all, you know, you have to let us make mistakes. We make mistakes, and it happens. I didn't know that black Minnesotans, black Americans had the luxury of taking these casualties. I obviously I'm wrong. I guess I'm not astute enough to understand the real politics of genocide. But clearly the governor and the little mayor for the city of Minneapolis have enunciated what the prima facie is, if you will, prima facie being evidence, quote unquote, on the record. So. But Don, we want to, the phone lines are open. If anybody got any questions, 347-426-3904. 347-426-3904. This is the Ron and Don, Don and Ron program coming to you from the beautiful enclave of the Twin Cities of Minneapolis and St. Paul, where we're shooting them down in the street. We've had so many gun battles since January. I thought we were in Beirut in the 1970s. You know what I'm saying? So, but the phone lines are open, man. And we've got some other issues. We've got the President Trump has announced an execution of federal prisoners will begin at the first time since 2003. They will begin the execution of prisoners on death row. And I'm not mistaken, I think that the majority of our death row in the federal system, the federal penal system, if you will, they might use the word corrections, but let's use the European terminology, penal system, kind of like Devil's Island. You know what I'm saying? But what the heck? But these things are in play. Executions and et cetera will start in December. They already have a list, I understand, of 17 individuals that will be executed. They're going to do like they do in Texas, where they kill three or four in the same day. I'm sorry, that was negative on my part from the left. Execute.
Oh, yeah.
If you would.
You're being toxic, Mr. Edwards. You're being toxic.
I'm sorry, Don. We said in the book that we won't do that anymore. I apologize for being toxic. But again, phone number 347-426-3904. This is the Ron and Don program coming to you from the Twin Cities of Minneapolis and St. Paul. We are the modern day version of Tombstone, Dodge City, Abilene. Notorious places.
Yes,
in
down.
Folklore.
Hey, Mr. Edwards, we have a phone call. We have a caller, last four digits, 7935. If that's you, you're live on the air. Go ahead. Caller? Okay, they probably want to listen. Here we have a friend of the show calling in from the Midwest. Sir, you're live on the air. Go ahead.
Yeah, good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
Good morning.
What can we do for you?
Yeah, I just had a question for Mr. Edwards because you brought up the death penalty. What do you think is there like politics behind this? I mean, what's your opinion of what's going on?
Well, my opinion, sir, is that it definitely is politics. It's race politics, if you will. They already, as we just said seconds ago, they already have like at least 17 names on the initial list of those that will be executed in December. Now, this is not anything, that we are making up speed on the Ron and Don program coming to you from the Twin Cities, Minneapolis, St. Paul. This is the big, powerful white media. It is the Department of Justice, if you will, and, of course, even our beloved White House, if you will, that they've got 17 ready to go. And to your specific question, it is a part of providing great renewed enthusiasm to the president's base, if you will, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Now, they've already begun on conservative talk radio to identify that these are bad people, and they always seem to find a African-American or person of color. And by the way, if I were Latino Hispanics trying to get across the board, I'd be very careful about being involved in an incident in which an American is killed, if will loses their lives, because you will immediately be charged, and the prosecutor, the U.S. attorney in whatever district you're in, will automatically ask for the death penalty and et cetera. But they have 17 ready to go. And better than half of that number are African Americans, if you will. But again, to your specific question, sir, is that this is a part of bloodletting, really. Trump will utilize this to the max, if you will. We maintain that by March of 2020, as they get ready for the caucuses and such things as that, Donald Trump and the Trump administration will basically have eliminated at least 80% of African Americans who are on death row as we speak this morning from the Twin Cities. At least 80% And it's something that just, you know, people are just, they're kind of pumped up, you know, to be able to see these black people, these black men. Oh, they have, I understand they have at least a couple of African-American women who are on federal death row. And they're really pumped up about how they will, you know, execute them, bring them into the special chamber, if you will. Normally, they do it by lethal injection, as I think that you know there, Steve, you and your people. But, you know, they decide to set them in the hot chair, if you will, you know, burn them up a little bit. But they are also experimenting, which kind of is in violation of the court decisions, with the mixture of toxic injections and et cetera. Some are saying already on conservative talk radio it will be a moment of glory in America to see these people agonize and suffocate and et cetera on these new drugs. See, nobody's talking about the kind of drugs that are going to be used. But to your question, it is to pump up the base. You know what I mean? It's about time. I mean, that's what they're saying. It's about time that we stop wasting money. But go ahead.
Mr. Edwards, right. Steve, I need to interject real quick here on this.
Uh-huh.
So these people, play devil's advocate, and so these people are on death row, which means they've done something heinous. Obviously,
no,
most cases.
I have to take exception, Mr. Allen. No. Yes. They have been found guilty of doing something heinous, but there's no absolute. And particularly in light of the terrible percentage of people who are innocent that have been "quote unquote" executed in the United States over the last 50 years, I have to take exception, sir. Take exception.
Okay. Well,
that all
that's what I'm trying to do.
Is that a declaration has been made that the circumstances and the alleged evidence shows that allegedly they have committed these heinous crimes, if you will. That's what it is. Got to be fair. Because we kill in executions in this country, particularly led by the state of Texas as it pertains to local jurisdictions, we kill too many people in this country who don't have, first and foremost, Don and Steve, they don't have the financial wherewithal to get top-notch attorneys and et cetera, if you will, and they certainly don't have the money to go through the appeals process. Now, many of the people that are on death row, and some have been there as long as 22, 23, 24 years. And that is a good argument that the conservative right is making. Now, they've been there too long. You know, they should have been dead by now, but let's do it. But, you know, I have to take exception, but go ahead, my friend. That's your observation.
No, I mean, I was just trying to see, you know, I know that a lot of people, like you said, are convicted, wrongly convicted, but for those that there is solid evidence or admission, you know, they're on death row for a reason. And I'm not trying to have a talking point from the right or left. I'm just saying that, you know, why now? Why start killing them now? They've been sitting in jail, eating up money, 30, 40 grand a year.
Well, because it is an issue for the election of 2020, and it shows a get-tough policy. So, you know, the Trump administration has been saying since you know, January of 2017, January 20th of 2017, when they swore him in, that we're going to get tough on crime. I would refer us historically back to a manifesto or a series of letters written by federal judges in the Southern District of California, primarily centered in San Diego, who raised some serious questions about, I don't know, it was during the Obama years, by the way, about the harshness of the penalties and et cetera that were being imposed, which included the death penalty. It's one of the reasons why the government has held to no executions since 2003. I'm like you. I'm trying to figure, well, why now? I mean, you got a person that's been there for 20, 21 years. The Innocence Projects, they've done a heck of a job, and I think that Steve's people who gave me a call and questioned me about that the Innocence Project has done a heck of a job of saving people's lives. I don't know other than what I'm hearing from right-wing blog radio. It's a good tough policy. It reminds me as an older person of the days. In fact, I remember when we had a mayor here by the name of Charles Stenbeck, 1971, 72. It's back to the days, gentlemen, of law and order. You know, yeah, whatever that's supposed to mean. The toughness of law and order. You know, let's say hang them up. In fact, I see that as a new theme. I mean, we've got to put her in jail. We've now got to send her back. We'll have a theme in December of this year that says burn them up.
Hey, Mr. Edwards, 3 minutes ago, the Star Tribune published one man dead after night of three shootings in Minneapolis. They just published
it. Oh, no, Mr. Allen. And Steve, we want to come back to you because we don't want to lose. You got to be kidding. I mean, those shootings took place hours and hours and hours ago. And we have another case. Man killed in the middle of the street in downtown Minneapolis, right?
Yep.
Oh.
One of the 1,000 blocks of West Lindale Avenue North. They're talking about that one. It was a 19th homicide. Gunfire broke out in the area of 33rd and Irving. Police were called to 3rd Street and 2nd Avenue in downtown Minneapolis, where they found two men with the gunshot wounds. So two people got shot actually in downtown Minneapolis last night. And, of course, the last paragraph in every one of these stories that I went back and read over the last 2 months, no arrests have been announced in any of these incidents.
Yes, and we talk about that frequently here. Cold cases, what we call cold cases, if you will. Boy, we got a lot of cold cases. We got a lot of black folks and some Native Americans, and now even a couple of Hispanics that get shot and killed. You come up with your own theory, but I maintain that we've got more right-wing vigilantes moving around on the streets of America than we want to fess up to. And that means death squads, if you will. But you appreciate it, my associate, Mr. Allen, just 5 minutes ago, capturing a sudden announcement by the Star Tribune. How many shootings last night altogether? What was it, 4 or 5? Lindale, you said?
Like 6 or 7.
Oh, okay.
Lindale, North Memorial, 33rd, 4, 5, 6, 2nd Street, 2 men, 7. Yeah, so it looks like 7. I don't really like math, but it looks like about 7. I could be wrong, but it looks like about 7 shootings last night alone.
Okay, that would make 10 in 2 days because of the 3 that were shot in North Minneapolis night before last at 9th and Oliver, 10th and Morgan, and the 3000 block. In other words, like 31st and Colfax, if you will. So that's 10. That's 10 in a 36-hour period. That's right up there. Proportionally, gentlemen, that's right up there with Chicago. You know what I'm saying? But let me just ask this question. Steve, sir, is there any other questions? I don't know if we answered the question of executions, but they will start, I understand, December 1. In fact, there's some conversation going on in the West Wing. Want to make sure we have a couple just before or after Christmas.
I did have, I guess, more of a statement. I think this is all part of Donald Trump's kind of way he goes after minorities generally. And if you remember Barack Obama, from what I understand, Barack Obama actually, for instance, deported more illegal aliens than Trump has. But Trump has made this such a big deal about Mexicans and all this, and it's kind of a show that he puts on. And then, of course, he goes after the congresswomen. And if you notice all the people that he always talks about possibly not being American, they're always minorities. So it's this sort of constant attack that he seems to have directed at minority people.
People of color,
right. So I think this whole thing with the federal death penalty it's just a sort of another way to do that. And so that's basically all I had to say. I really didn't have any other questions.
Let me ask you a question before we let you get away there, LC.
Okay.
Why has the president not talked about his good friend, the billionaire, who actually, I guess, either slipped and fell in the shower room on a bar of soap or et cetera, his good friend that almost broke his neck. Why hasn't he said anything about this man who now we're hearing used the cosmetic companies and et cetera to lure young women into slave trafficking, sex trafficking, and et cetera? But my president has not said anything about that. What is your take in the reverse? What is your take about these people that he doesn't talk? He didn't say anything about the owner, and they are good buddies because he used to come down to the president's home there in Florida, the owner of the New England Patriots. In fact, the way they got through taking care of that after he violated all those Asian women that were being brought into the United States and working at massage parlors in Florida and et cetera. I know that the president didn't have, or Mr. Crabb, I know that the president hasn't had anything to say about the gentleman of that particular ilk, if you will.
Yeah. Well, he has a pattern of kind of doing that. I've noticed that. You know, and those guys are, you know, his buddies also. So he doesn't say, he really doesn't say a whole lot about that. But he does seem to go after minorities,
He doesn't like people of color because isn't he the same president that wanted to execute? And that's kind of a response now to my associate, Mr. Allen, on the right, Central Park Five. Because he wanted to lynch them, fry them, if you will, take them to Sing Sing, upstate New York, and turn the juice on and et cetera. And we came to find out that all five of those young African-Americans were innocent. But he made a reputation. He took out ads in the New York Times, New York Daily News, and et cetera, talking about that these animals, should be quote unquote dispatched to Fort Whip. I just kind of want to get a feel about who it is we should talk about, who it is we should. All right. Thank you, Steve.
Yeah, okay.
Appreciate
all right.
It from
thank
the Midwest.
You.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you. All right. Bye bye.
Yeah, you know, the thing we're going to have to do, Don, is become at least big millionaires, and we can become friends of the president. We can just go out and do whatever we want to do.
And I think we have another caller here, Mr. Edwards.
Oh, let's get him in.
0171, you're live on the air. Do you have a comment or a question?
Well, I do, Joe, and this is Mr. M. I'm on the road. I'm not sure if I'm coming in clear.
Yeah, you're coming in clear. Go ahead.
Okay.
The NSA will see to that. The NSA will make sure of that, brother. Go ahead. What you got? What's your question?
Well, just just to follow up a little bit on the shootings. Now these shootings seem to be in a concentrated area. Is that, within a small radius? I mean, they're not all over the city or all over the Twin Cities, or are they?
No, the 10 that we have, including the 7 reported about 8 minutes ago now by the very powerful Star Tribune, are in an area of downtown and North Minneapolis. So the radius would be downtown North Minneapolis. We don't, if anybody was shot in South Minneapolis last night, Star Tribune hasn't reported on that yet. But to your specific question, the 10 that have been shot in a 36-hour period of time, Mr. Allen, my associate, has just identified them, they would be, let's say they would be in a 40-block radius, if you will, downtown, if you will, which is on the edge of North Minneapolis, and then all throughout North Minneapolis.
Wow. And also, have any of these perpetrators been, any of these shooters or perpetrators, have they been identified or brought in, or are they still on the loose?
No, I think that if you go back and take a look at any recording, my associate, Mr. Allen, pointed out that, as he said, the end of all of these stories by these top-notch reporters for the Minneapolis Star Tribune has been no one is in custody. Now, I hear information periodically over a period of time that somebody has been apprehended. This would maybe be 4 or 5 months later, 10 weeks later. That's the way it goes, except the cold case. Now, we have one of the most celebrated cold cases right now in our beloved city of a young African-American who no one can find out his name. In fact, we called the attorneys representing the young man and his family just yesterday. Mr. Michael Pett is not returning phone calls now with regards to what is the intent. And this young man has some juice. He's 18 years old, but he has some juice. His family has gone out and they've raised money. The 18-year-old African-American who allegedly killed a very popular white female, 54 or 5-year-old female, 4 years ago, has not been charged and taken into court and certified as an adult. But that's a cold case. And what you're going to find out in this particular case, this cold case of the unidentified 18-year-old African-American, is that the police bungled the case, and then representatives of the African-American community said they were going to bring him in. And then they had to indicate that, oops, he had been lured to Chicago and there had been brutally murdered and had been entombed in a wall in an apartment building on the south side. But we've reported that exclusively here for a couple of years. So you want to keep your eye on cold cases. You really do, because Mr. Allen just pointed out, Star Tribune always says no suspects. So I don't know what to say. We said that we needed more police. Our chief, African-American chief, first in 150 years, and lo and behold, the little mayor, Jacob Frisch, cut his head off a couple of days ago by saying that it was premature to talk about more police. The mayor went on to say that it is a budget consideration and there's now not enough money. Now, there was enough money for Justine's family, $20 million. Yeah, $20 million to pay off Justine's family. They should have recognized that in doing that, they also took $1 million out of the budget of the Minneapolis Police Department, that maybe that would hurt the police department. But I don't know. Mr. Allen and I merely report to you. We're not primetime players.
Well, also, in regard to shooting, do we know, are these, have they been portrayed as some type of gang type of activity, or, are these personal disputes? Has there ever been any information released about the reasons?
Well, let me cut in as we come down to the time. The Don and Ron program being broadcast and emanating from Twin City, we are on record, and anyone challenges Mr. Allen will go into the archive and we'll play it. We have been saying here for quite some time, let's say since certainly January, actually going back to the summer of 2018, that the mayor, I never hear from the mayor, never hear anything from the mayor, and then when he pushes the chief out there, and then the chief makes a statement, and then the mayor undercuts him. We should, based on 10 shootings, and we're doing this 10, 11, 12 within, 36, 72 hours, and et cetera, quite frequently here. We've been doing it ever since March. You would think that the mayor, who is also an attorney, if you will, you would think that he would hold a press conference, that he would indicate that he is talking to the governor. But then the governor has said, you have to learn by the experience of failure. So if, Negroes get shot and killed during the course of all of this gang banging or whatever you want to call it, then, that's something that just goes with the territory. But I would have thought that by now, and I know that my colleague from the right, Mr. Allen, would agree, that we would have had a press conference by the mayor of the city of Minneapolis indicating that this is unacceptable. But, we haven't had it. But we've got a couple committees, that are going to take a look at the problem of police misconduct and gun violence, if you will. So we'll meet in committee, they'll meet in committee, and, you know, we'll analyze it, and then the information, according to the news releases, will be turned over to the legislature in February. So that's just, you know, that's just, you know, I assume that'll save one or two lives, I assume. So I hope that answers your specific question about what is being said, because bottom line, nobody cares about the demise and the death of black people in this town except black people. I mean, come on, that's, my brother, that's really what it is. You've lived all your life in South Minneapolis. We've been here for a long period of time, you know. And so nobody cares. I mean, we care, but the powers to be don't care, you know. Now, there'll be three
hearings.
They
throw a committee.
Yeah. There'll be three hearings. We assume that one will be in the Twin Cities, one in northern Minnesota, one in southern Minnesota, you know, and then they'll put together the testimony. And then they'll make a recommendation to the legislature, maybe in, got to remember now, 2020 is also an election year. All representatives have to stand for re-election. So you won't be getting much out of the House of Representatives in Minnesota, just like you won't be getting much out of the Senate in the federal government. Won't be doing much on impeachment. But, hey, that's all we can lay out. All we can do is report to you. Go ahead. Any other questions, Em, as you're driving along the highway?
Well, just
Be careful where you're at now.
Yeah, just
in the wrong part of the state.
Well, very careful, man. Very, very, very careful. I mean, I'm hands-free. I mean, this is, you know, this is hands-free. But these committees, you know, I mean, that seems to be a strategic move. You know, you pull all these supposed heads from all these different agencies, like the movies Avengers. You know, you bring all these people together, and it's just going to be a very strong force for change. But it never happens. I mean, it's a cosmetic type of situation, ahead of this, head of that, head of social services, which, you know, the governor seems to have his own hands full with a lot of the shenanigans going on with DHS and Department of Corrections and all of these things under his watch. But the committees, I don't have any, I have very little say, but over the years I've seen nothing come out of it. Maybe a report of this and that. I've never seen any action. I've never seen any dollars. I've never seen any holding in on the problems. Just, you know, they tell you we have a committee, so we're supposed to be, oh, great, there's a committee on it. This thing will be taken care of. But never happened.
No, no. Well, I was impressed by the letter sent, and this is interesting, by a white activist, Ms. Michelle Gross, in which she challenged the seriousness and the authenticity we're going to take a look at the problem, you know, police and particularly gun violence and et cetera. She has written a letter which actually the Star Tribune, the most powerful, largest paper here in the state of Minnesota, declined to provide the full text of. If you go back 4 days, you won't find the text of Ms. Gross's letter to the powers to be. I applaud her, wherever she is and whoever she is, Ms. Gross, and her organization, because it's like you've been saying, it's like Mr. Allen, my associate, and nobody cares, man. Nobody, the people don't care nothing about the black folks killing each other. You know, there'd be, you know. And the governor says, a man who is an educator, by the way, Mr. Allen, is an educator, made the statement, said, well, we have to learn by our mistakes. Wow. You know, that's not what they said when Justine Diamond was shot and killed by a black police officer. I mean, yeah. They didn't make no mistakes as they sent him to jail for 12 and a half years. I mean, you know. And your question also, M, should include, why are all of these individuals being allowed on the streets? Because there are two individuals on the two committees that are former, quote-unquote, inmates of the state penitentiary. I mean, is that the qualification? Is that why somebody like Elisa Clemens, a former police officer, has had her head cut off and they refused to put her on any of the committees? I repeat again, two of the individuals on these two committees, one on each committee, our former quote unquote inmate and resident, if you will, of the criminal justice system. I guess that's the way it works. I mean, you don't have a criminal record, as I know it. I've known you for years, but you wouldn't qualify to get off. Don Allen served this country in the United States Armed Forces and et cetera. He wouldn't qualify. And God knows that a troublemaker like me wouldn't qualify. So I don't know, man. I don't know. I mean, I know where the answers are, but I just don't think that our state has the intestinal fortitude to move ahead. Again, I repeat for our listening audiences around the world, 10 African-Americans shot and wounded and killed in this city in a 36-hour period.
Hey, Mr. Edwards, and I'm glad you said that, but you know why they're downplaying it on the news channels and on the newspaper is tonight is the Aquatennial event.
Oh,
thank you, Ms. LaSalle.
Yes,
We got Cardi B at the Target Center, the 90s party at First Avenue, the Loring Park Festival, and much, 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 much more. So, of course, they're not going to put this in the news. You terrify people here from out of town.
You are absolutely, because we've had enough cancellation at our 4- and 5-star hotels, particularly in downtown Minneapolis. And Steve Kramer, a powerful president of the Chamber of Commerce or the Downtown Council, whichever it is, they are both the same, has clearly indicated to the mayor and I think to the chief, you know, we're not going to tolerate this. We're losing money. We don't care nothing about Black lives being lost. Uh-oh, look out. But we're, you know, big white corporate is losing money. And thank you, Don, for reminding us. That's right. This is the big night in downtown Minneapolis. Yeah, yeah. And basically what's being said is the white community must be made to feel safe and comfortable. Yeah.
That's the bottom line.
All right, thank you, and Eric, drive safely, M, out there in western Minnesota, wherever you're at. Don't want the Klan to get a hold of you out there. All right, Don, how much time we got left, man? We can get ready. I definitely want James Brown to take us home. Go ahead, brother.
Yeah, we have 2 minutes and 51 seconds left, so we can.
All right.
We can close it out. Thanks, folks, for listening. We'll be back next week. You know, I suggest that if you've listened to the show called The Council on Minnesota for African Heritage and demand accountability by its executive director, Justin Terrell, immediately.
We've been built and we've been gone.